We return to the book of Deuteronomy, the book of the second law, Moses' final address to the Israeli people shortly before they go into the promised land. We're in chapter number 8, and I want to start at verse 11. Moses is trying to help his students of 40 years, because that's effectively what they are, to remember that God should be trusted, because God wants what's best for them. He does not want them to get sucked into the con groups of paganism, of false gods, and lose out on the blessings of God. And so verse number 11, along those lines, says this: "Take care, lest you forget He who is your God by not keeping His commandments and His rules and His statutes, which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and you're full and have built good houses and you live in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and gold is multiplied and all that you have is multiplied, and then your heart," remember, heart for the Israeli people is the thinking place, the choice place, "then your heart will be lifted up and you forget He who is your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, who led you through the great and terrifying wilderness with its fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground where there was no water, who brought you water out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna that your fathers did not know, that He might humble you and test you to do you good in the end." So that's back on the focal point that we saw at the end of our last session, that the reason God put the Israelis out in the middle of nowhere was so that they could learn to trust Him, that He can provide all the necessities of life. So if you learn to trust God for those necessities, you will also learn to trust God in anything that He tells you. That was the idea. Now, the original plan was for the Israelis to spend just a little over a year, maybe a year and a half, in the wilderness, and then they would have gone into the promised land. But they ended up, because of their sin, doing a full 40 years. And so the reminder here is, when you go into the land in a few months, and then you spend a few years there soaking up God's blessing, don't you dare start thinking that you did this for yourself, that this is all about you, and forget to give thanks to God. And you need to remember that God put you through your paces out here in the wilderness to verify you were the real deal. So don't prove to be a phony. Don't prove to be counterfeit. Remember, the whole idea of testing is to make sure something's genuine, like the coin of old that they cut with a knife in order to make sure it was silver or gold all the way to its core. Or some of us grew up watching shows or watching cartoons where somebody being given a coin would put it in between their teeth and try to bend it. Because, of course, a lead slug would bend, whereas a real silver coin wouldn't. And so that's the testing process. And so the Israelis have been through the testing process. Once they get into the promised land, don't become counterfeit. That's what he's saying. Verse number 17, "Beware lest you say in your heart, 'My power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth.' You shall remember He who is your God, for it is He who gives you power to get wealth." A good thing to remember. I don't even remember what the movie is, but it always comes to my mind. I've never seen the whole thing, just seen this particular part of it. It's a Jimmy Stewart movie, and Jimmy Stewart is being pressured to offer a blessing on a meal by, I think it must have been his wife or somebody. And so he starts praying some prayer about this food that I worked for and this food that I provided and all of that. And he totally forgets in the process that it is God that gives him the strength, the energy, the intellect, the knowledge base, the ability to go and do all those things. So yes, he was definitely involved in the process, but so was God. And so that's the reminder here. For it was he who gives you power to get wealth, that you may confirm his covenant that he swore to your fathers as it is this day. And if you forget he who is your God, and you go after other gods and serve them and worship them, I solemnly warn you today that you shall perish. Like the nations that he who is makes to perish before you, so shall you perish because you would not obey the voice of he who is your God. Very early on in the book of Deuteronomy, Moses prophetically warns this generation and the kids growing up underneath them. If you blow God off, if you blow God's covenant off, then you will receive the exact same fate that the Canaanites are going to receive at your hand. You will be judged and punished, and you will be expelled from the land, and if you try to stay, you will be executed. That will be part of the curse that will be emphasized much later. Chapter number 9. Hear, O Israel, you are to cross over the Jordan today to go in to dispossess nations greater and mightier than you, cities great and fortified up to heaven, a people great and tall, the sons of the Anakim, whom you know, and of whom you have heard it said, who can stand before the sons of Anak? Now, the word today here, for some reason, throws some people off. Moses is going to be long dead by the time these Israelis cross the Jordan on dry ground, miraculously. So they're not going across on this literal day. In fact, it's much more likely that the today is a modifier of here. Listen up, today, the Jordan that you're going to be crossing over, okay? And the focal point should actually be on the idea that on their own strength, they'd never be able to do these things. You know, the cities are big and well fortified, and the people, some of them are actually giant offspring, the sons of the Anakim, some of the remnants of this horrendous genetic experiment done by fallen angels. That was mentioned in the book of Genesis as happening before and after the flood. These guys are big and scary. Remember Og. Og slept in a bed that was 12 feet long. Well, the only person to need a 12-foot long bed is somebody that's probably about 10 feet. So these guys were big and scary. The Anakim that are referenced here are living right around Hebron. Caleb has already seen them 40 years earlier and said, that's where I want to go, and I'll take those people down with God's help. And so Moses says, you're getting ready to go in to a place that's occupied by some pretty scary people. Verse 3, know therefore today that he who goes over before you as a consuming fire is he who is your God. And the consuming fire part, they can definitely get their minds wrapped around that, because as Moses is making this address up over their head, right there in their either direct vision or their peripheral vision, is the glowing cloud by day and fire by night of God's personal presence. Well, he's going to be leading into the promised land. He will destroy them and subdue them before you. So you shall drive them out and make them perish quickly as he who is has promised you. So that's the commitment God is making to the Israelites through Moses. Verse 4, do not say in your heart, after he who is your God has thrust them out before you, it's because of my righteousness that he who is has brought me in to possess this land. Don't get full of yourself and think that God did all of this because you're such a wonderful person. Now, here's the reality. Whereas it was because of the wickedness of these nations that he who is driving them out before you. Not because of your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart as are you going in to possess this land, but because of the wickedness of these nations he who is your God is driving out from before you, that he may confirm the word that he who is swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob. Always remember the promise that God made to Abraham that the sins of the Canaanites has not yet reached fullness. But more than 400 years later, four generations later, they will have reached a climactic point. And God said to Abraham, I'll bring your descendants back here, and I will punish the sins of the Canaanites, and then will hand over the promised land to your faithful seed. Verse number 6, know therefore that he who is your God is not giving you this good land to possess because of your righteousness, for you are a stubborn people. Oh boy, a teacher knows his students. And Moses is fully aware that even though there's probably a good core remnant that are good students, there's a bunch of them that are subpar. They're only in this for what they can get out of it. Moses, I think, is fully aware that some of these guys have been fudging on their relationship with God through the wilderness. So he's not getting fooled. He says, you guys are a stubborn people. Remember and do not forget how you provoked he who is your God to wrath in the wilderness. From the day you came out of the land of Egypt until you came to this place, you have been rebellious against he who is. Now the majority of those that were the troublemakers from Exodus onward during these last 40 years, they're dead. But remember, those guys that are in their 50s right now, they're the oldest crew. They were teenagers. And a lot of them were chips off the old block. The apple didn't fall too far from the tree, that sort of thing. And so some of this eldest generation that's going to go into the promised land, they also were stubborn and hard-hearted there at the beginning of the Exodus. The only reason that they're still alive is because they were underage. That's the only thing that's allowed them to make it to this point. So he continues along that line. Even at Horeb, which is another name for Mount Sinai, you provoked he who is to wrath, and he who is was so angry with you that he was ready to destroy you. When I went up on the mountain to receive the tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant that he who is made with you, I remained on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water. Now, Moses is fast-forwarding through some events here. He brought down that first edition of the handwritten tablets from God, and that's when he saw the golden calf, which God had already told him about, and he broke that first edition, and then he deals with the rebellion that was happening there, and then he goes back up on the mountain within a couple of days, I think, and that's when he stays for 40 days and 40 nights, another 40 days and 40 nights. Now, the first one, he was up there 40 days and 40 nights. And apparently that time he didn't eat or drink anything either. So he's got two periods that are being talked about here with the golden calf incident in between. So verse 10, he who is gave me the two tablets of stone written with the finger of God, and on them were all the words that he who is had spoken with you in the mountain out of the midst of the fire on the day of the assembly. At the end of 40 days and 40 nights, he who is gave me the two tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant. And then he who is said to me, arise, go down quickly from here, for your people whom you have brought from Egypt have acted corruptly. They've turned aside quickly out of the way that I have commanded them. They have made themselves a metal image. So Moses is now, going back over some of the history, because we learn from history. Furthermore, he who is said to me, I've seen this people. Behold, it is a stubborn people. Let me alone that I may destroy them and blot out their name from under heaven, and I'll make you a nation mightier and greater than they. So I turned and I came down from the mountain, and the mountain was burning with fire. The two tablets of the covenant were in my two hands. I looked, and behold, you'd sinned against he who is your God. You'd made for yourselves a golden calf. You turned aside quickly from the way that he who is had commanded you. So I took hold of the two tablets and threw them out of my two hands and broke them before your eyes. And then I lay prostrate before he who is as before 40 days and 40 nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water because of all that sin that you had committed in doing what was evil in the sight of he who is to provoke him to anger. For I was afraid of the anger and hot displeasure that he who is bore against you, so that he was ready to destroy you. So this is Moses reminding the remnant of people that were alive at this event. You remember that it was touch and go there for a while. God would have been right in executing the whole lot of you. But I stepped in as an intercessor because that's what God expected of me and that's what you guys needed. So even though judgment would have been right, I asked for mercy. And apparently he says I was doing it repeatedly over that next 40-day period that I was up on Mount Sinai. And so he says, but he who is listened to me that time also. He who is was so angry with Aaron that he was ready to destroy him. And I prayed for Aaron also at the same time. Now, this is new material here. All we know is that Moses was mad at Aaron in assisting in making the golden calf because Aaron, no doubt, had convinced himself that he was just simply making a representation of the Creator God. Remember back when we were first talking about this, we mentioned that the region just immediately south of where the Israelis were located had a representation of the Creator God coming in the form of a calf. And so Aaron was probably trying to mix images that were familiar with the Israelis with the reality of God. Now, he was wrong. I'm not trying to make excuses for him. I'm just trying to explain what was probably in his head. But apparently, it was a big enough leadership sin that he could have been executed on the spot. And Moses begged God for mercy. And Aaron got another 40 years of mercy, and apparently made up for it. Verse 21, then I took the sinful thing, that calf that you had made, and I burned it with fire, crushed it, grinding it very small until it was as fine as dust. And then I threw it, the dust of it, into the brook that ran down from the mountain. Remember the supernatural water supply that came from the rock up on Mount Horeb. So he sprinkles that in that water, at least some of it probably gets ingested by the Israelis. It was just a reminder, you have to account for your own sin here. Verse 22, since he's on this topic of troublemakers, at Tabor also, and at Massah, and then at Kibroth Hattaavah, you provoked he who is to wrath. So repeated times through their history, cause and trouble. And when he who has sent you from Kadesh Barnea, remember the southern entry point into the promised land, saying, go up and take possession of the land that I've given you, then you rebelled against the commandment of he who is your God and did not believe him or obey his voice. You have been rebellious against he who is from the day I knew you. Now that's, again, pretty damning testimony from your teacher, somebody that has known you for 40 years, to say, you have been pushing God's buttons for 40 years. Verse 25. So I lay prostrate before he who is for these 40 days and 40 nights, because he who is had said he would destroy you. And I prayed to he who is, oh, he who is God, do not destroy your people and your heritage, whom you have redeemed through your greatness, whom you have brought out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Back when we were actually looking at this incident, when it was occurring, I challenge you to remember that Moses has been prompted by God to act the part of intercessor. God already knew that he was not going to destroy these Israelites because it would violate his promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But Moses needed to buy in to his responsibility as intercessor. He had to be all in. He had to be on board with this job. And so God pushed him into defending the Israelis against God. And so here is Moses praying to God, saying, God, you got to remember. You got to remember that this would be bad for you to just simply destroy them. Verse 27, remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Don't regard the stubbornness of this people or their wickedness or their sin, lest the land from which you brought us say, it's because he who is was not able to bring them into the land that he promised them, and because he hated them, he's brought them out to put them to death in the wilderness. So Moses interceded on behalf of Israel and said, God, this breaking of promises, it's going to give you bad press in Egypt. They're going to go around saying you're a bad God. They're going to go around saying that you were unable to keep your promises, and that's why you just kind of eradicated a whole bunch of them. Verse 29, Moses finishes, for they are your people and your heritage. God had started this event by saying, your people, your problem, that sort of thing. So here's Moses reminding God. He doesn't really need to, but it's helpful for his purposes. Actually, they're your people, God. They're your heritage. They belong to you, not me, whom you brought out by your great power and your outstretched arm. And so the long story short, of course, is that God does not destroy them. Instead, God gives further instructions to Moses. Because, again, we're going through this pretty fast in a lot of it because we've heard it before. It's just coming from Moses' recollections and his emotion. So chapter 10, at that time, he who is said to me, cut for yourself two tablets of stone like the first, come up to me on the mountain, and make an ark of wood. Now, some people get confused. The ark of wood here may not necessarily be the ark of the covenant, which gets made later. This may just simply be a smaller storage box for the two stone tablets so that Moses can carry them more easily. All right? So I will write on the tablets the words that were on the first tablets that you broke, and you shall put them in the ark, in the box. So this is the second edition, and you can very clearly see from Moses' own testimony, God wrote both editions. Yes, Moses cut the second tablets out, but God's the one that wrote on them. Verse 3, so I made an ark or a box of acacia wood, and I cut two tablets of stone like the first, and I went up on the mountain with the two tablets in my hand, and he, meaning God, wrote on the tablets in the same writing as before, the Ten Commandments, the ten words, that he who is had spoken to you on the mountain out of the midst of the fire on the day of the assembly, which would have been the first Pentecost probably. And I turned and came down from the mountain and put the tablets in the box, the ark that I had made. Again, probably not the Ark of the Covenant, which does not get made for several weeks and even months after Moses returned this second time from Mount Sinai. Probably just a more simple box to contain these tablets. And there they are, as he who is commanded me. So basically, they're right there, still existing now inside the Ark of the Covenant. We've run out of time. I want to remind you as we're wrapping up today, one of the reasons that many of the ancient manuscripts in Hebrew contain a special, more ancient lettering for the name of God is because through the years, while the lettering changed in Hebrew, the scribes tried to copy the autograph of God himself from the Ten Commandments themselves. So just a little interesting side note until the next time we get into the Word.